Forget unemployment, debt, and Europe. Let's go shopping. From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. It is Friday, November 25th, Black Friday. Coming up, we'll have a conversation with the CEO of Macy's about the state of the American consumer. Also, more people are starting to talk about the end of the euro. And goodbye, cash register. Hello, iPad. Well, actually, not so fast. Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Well, many retailers didn't even wait until midnight to open their doors to discount hunters for Black Friday sales today, which of course meant those stores' employees had to work on Thanksgiving. Not a lot of sympathy from Black Friday shoppers Angelica Rangel and Chris Embury this morning near San Diego.
Money is money, too. Like, if they get paid, I don't know why they would have a reason to complain about it either.
For people to start complaining about having to work, people should be happy that they have work.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. The National Retail Federation says 152 million Americans will be hitting the stores this weekend. That would be a record, which seems odd in an economy that's saddled with high unemployment and lots of consumer debt. Here to talk more about the American consumer with us is the CEO of Macy's, Terry Lundgren. He joins us from the company's flagship store in New York's Herald Square. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we've heard that this could be a record-breaking Black Friday. How is that possible in this economy?
You know, it helps that we've had somewhat of a record-breaking year so far. At Macy's, Inc., we're up 5.3% on same-store sales for the year-to-date period, after running on a very strong year last year. So in spite of the challenges of the economy, people are coming out to Macy's in particular because I think we've had some strong values consistently and we've got great brands, and I think we're executing pretty well.
What's the best and worst performing part of the United States for you right now?
Interestingly, the best performing part of our country in terms of regional differences has been Florida, the whole
wow.
Southeast part of the business. And people are still concerned about the real estate market in that area. But I think that particular market has had so much challenge over the last several years that there must be a great deal of pent-up demand. And then I would say that the more challenged part of the country has been parts of the Midwest. You know, you think back all year long, you think of flooding, you think of tornadoes, and I think those are big setbacks and have been. That they're starting to bounce back now, but for the year-to-date period, that would be my answer.
When I think of how we'll shop in the future, I think online, I think mobile, stuff like that. How does a company like Macy's fit into that landscape going forward?
Well, we're one of the most advanced companies when it comes to the online business. By next year, we'll have a business that's approaching $2 billion in online sales. So we're very, very successful in that area, and we've been investing there. That's where a lot of the capital investments that I've made for the company have gone into technology over the last 3 years, and it's really paying off. We're up 40% over last year on the online part of our business, this year on a big base. So today, the most important customer and the most important trend is what we call the omnichannel consumer. And that is the consumer who is shopping on his or her phone or shopping at their desktop and going into our stores. So I think that's the key customer, and the future will be for us to figure out how to encourage the online customer to come to our stores and encourage the customer in our stores to shop online.
Well, you're in the famous flagship Herald Square store. Do you see a day when Macy's doesn't need properties like that anymore?
I sure don't. In fact, I just made a pretty large commitment. I announced a couple of weeks ago that we're going to be investing $400 million into this one single store here at Macy's Herald Square. Now, it is the largest store in the world, so it does require a lot of attention. But I think that could be the single largest renovation in the history of retailing. But that's our bet and commitment on the future of department store retailing and in this particular fantastic store here.
Terry Lundgren is the CEO of Macy's. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.
Well, as Terry Lundgren just said, consumers are looking for value today. And among the most discounted items you'll find on the shelves this year are TV sets. Andrea Gardner explains why.
2011 hasn't been a banner year for the television set. The down economy has trumped new technology like 3D and internet-ready TV, features that retailers hoped would spur demand. Andrew Fitzpatrick is an analyst with Hinsdale Associates.
Retailers were hoping that, of course, the Super Bowl would generate interest, and that really didn't materialize.
With extra inventory on the shelf, retailers like Best Buy and Walmart are going aggressive with deep discounts. Paul Gagnon researches electronics for Display Search. He says that's what it takes to sell TVs in this economy.
Getting the most screen size for the buck is the order of the day for the holidays.
Gagnon says TV prices will be down an average of 20% this holiday season. And today, some have been discounted up to 60%. But by this time, I bet those are already long gone. I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
Well, rumor had it that today would be opening day for a new Apple store in the middle of one of the busiest places in America, New York City's Grand Central Terminal. Now, it appears Apple fans will have to wait a bit longer. And as Sally Herships reports, the other retailers in Grand Central are bracing for impact.
I'm standing in the middle of Grand Central Station. I'm just one of 750,000 people who pass through here every day. On the balcony above me, there used to be a restaurant. Now, there are signs that read, "Grab more than flowers on your way home." Apple is coming, and retailers here are wondering if the new store will bring them more business or suck customers away.
I think it can help the help.
Paul Nippes is an owner of Kidding Around, a toy store at Grand Central. Nippes is firmly on the pro-Apple side. His wife, Tina Clark, not so much.
People are already walking through like crazy. I mean, we got lots of walkthroughs. It's the stop, please, that we're looking forward to.
Down the hall and even closer to Apple's new site is Cursive, a stationery and gift store. Elena Carey works there. She says she's got mixed feelings.
And I hope people look past just Apple and they see that there are small independent shops that are owned by real human beings who live right here in New York City.
And like Cursive, some of these shops sell iPad covers. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective. Italy had a bond sale today and ended up paying more to borrow money than it's had to pay at any time since joining the euro. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us now from London with the details. Stephen, what happened today in Italy?
Well, the Italian government sold all the bonds it was trying to sell, but at a cost. As you say, investors demanded a much higher rate of interest than before, almost 8%. This is part of an accelerating trend across the eurozone now. Investors are getting more and more nervous about the euro. What they're saying is, we don't really want to buy these bonds until the eurozone governments take radical action to stop the crisis.
Well, we knew that Italy was in trouble already. Do we now have to start worrying about countries further up the chain?
Well, we'll see. We've got more bond sales next week from Belgium, Italy again, and France, with the prospect of another upward move in borrowing costs if the eurozone governments don't take radical action. This can't go on indefinitely, of course. Eventually, a eurozone country will default, and that could precipitate the breakup of the euro.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London, and let's get reaction now from Chris Lowe. He is chief economist with FTN Financial, and he's with us from New York, as he is every Friday. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So it does sound like things are getting worse in Europe. Are the stakes getting bigger here?
Well, they absolutely are. And you know, what's interesting watching this from the sidelines, we talked to a customer who's an Italian banker the other day who said, look, it's beginning to feel like we're going back to the lira, which means I'm the loser anyway. But I'd rather do it by going to the lira now than first going to austerity, then losing my job, and then going to the lira.
Well, do you think that that's where we're headed, that the euro will just go away and these countries will go back to their currencies?
I suspect we'll still have a euro. The question is, who's going to be in it? And the way it boils down, you're either going to have a devaluation of some kind involving Germany, or you'll have one that takes place by peripheral countries pulling out and devaluing. That's the argument they're having. In the meantime, it's noteworthy that the banks that trade foreign exchange are beginning to prepare for the eventuality of the breakup of the euro. So that's a pretty significant change that began just this week.
Well, how significant is it for the United States?
That's the big question, obviously, for us. And I have to tell you, there aren't very many economists who agree on this, but I don't think it's going to be a huge deal. To put it in numbers, we only export about 1.7% of GDP to Europe. And what that means is they could have a massive recession. Our exports could be down 20%, and it would only cut a quarter point off of growth. So it's not, trouble's not coming from there. What we have to worry about is contagion through the banks.
Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Well, now to Syria, where more than 3,500 people have been killed during months of anti-government protests. And this morning, the government is facing new economic sanctions after ignoring a deadline from the Arab League of 21 Nations to allow international observers into the country. For more, we turn to the BBC's Jim Muir, who has been following the situation. He's with us now from Beirut, Lebanon. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the deadline has passed. No word from Syria. What happens now?
Well, unless something does happen from Syria, a kind of last minute or in fact after the last minute acceptance of the deal, the Arab League would go ahead probably Saturday, possibly Sunday, with a meeting of its economic council, which would impose sanctions on Syria. The ideas being bandied around are things like a commercial flight ban that would obviously really hit the Syrians psychologically by isolating them in terms of air contacts, also freezing dealings with the Syrian Central Bank and other institutions on the financial front, and freezing the assets of Syrian individuals in the Arab world.
And Jim, what difference does it make that these sanctions would be coming from the Arab League and not from, say, the US or Europe?
Well, of course, this is the kind of thing that was the precursor to the NATO action in Libya. So from the Damascus regime's point of view, it would be an important kind of Arab platform stacked up against it. The two steps they've gone through now, one has been the suspension of Syria's membership in the Arab League, which is like saying you don't belong to this club anymore, isolating it, and now economic sanctions, assuming they do go ahead. It does, in a way, open the way to some kind of international intervention.
The BBC's Jim Muir in Beirut, Lebanon. Thanks so much.
You're most welcome.
Well, if you plan on using your credit card at one of the Black Friday sales today, you might notice something different. Instead of the clerk processing your transaction with a traditional point-of-sale device like a cash register, he or she might be using a mobile device like an iPad. That trend means there are a lot of people making point-of-sale apps to run those transactions. But as Stephen Nesson reports, the big players in the industry aren't going down without a fight.
3 years ago, Brooklyn businessman Jason Richelson was running two wine shops and a grocery store when all of his cash register servers went down at the same time.
So I went online and I searched for a cloud point of sale. And guess what? I didn't find any.
So Richelson created a complete point of sale system that runs on a tablet computer. His app was accepted by Apple in August, and now more than 50 other retailers around the country are using it. Other mobile point of sale apps have also been developed.
Do I see them stealing Marketplace? If their product is good enough, potentially they can.
That's Joe Finizio. He tracks retail technology as the head of Retailer Solutions Providers Association.
However, the larger players and the traditional players in the marketplace, they're not the big players by chance.
Finizio says mobile apps still make up less than 1% of the $60 billion point-of-sale industry.
The applications that are running on an iPad or an Android tablet, hurting the other folks? Hell no.
Big players include IBM, NCR, and Micros.
In fact, it's igniting them to create more applications for the customers and the retailers.
Dave Hoffman is the director of consumer solutions at Micros, which runs point-of-sale systems in a third of all restaurants in the U.S. He's part of a recently created department tasked with creating mobile apps.
I don't know that we're necessarily playing catch-up. The Micros software that we have that we're selling today, you know, its roots go back to late 70s, early 80s, and that's, you know, the evolution of this software is not something that starts in a day's time and all of a sudden has all the features you need.
Right now, Micros is piloting its mobile apps in restaurants in the company's hometown of Columbia, Maryland. In New York, I'm Stephen Nesson for Marketplace.
The National Hockey League champions, the Boston Bruins, will try to extend a 10-game winning streak today against the Detroit Red Wings. But it turns out the real drama in hockey is off the ice. The NHL's Board of Governors is getting ready to vote on a realignment plan to move different teams into different conferences. And as Sarah Hewlett reports, where the teams end up is likely to have more to do with money than geography.
The Winnipeg Jets are now stuck in the Southeast Division of the NHL's Eastern Conference, along with teams from sunny places like Tampa and South Florida. It's widely expected the Jets will move to the Western Conference next year, and that leaves an opening in the Eastern Conference, an opening the Detroit Red Wings would love to grab. They're one of two Western Conference teams located in the Eastern time zone. The other is the Columbus Blue Jackets. Rod Fort is a sports economist at the University of Michigan. He says despite the uncertainty of who will go,
one thing you can rest assured, it's unlikely that the rearrangement will decrease the revenues in the National Hockey League.
Fort says the NHL will probably pick the option that generates
as much TV money as they can.
Given the Red Wings' success over the years and their popularity outside Detroit, hockey fans in the East could be seeing a lot more of that jersey with the winged tire. I'm Sarah Hewlett for Marketplace.
And finally, to a store in Missouri that is beating the odds in a down economy. It's called Uncle Sam's Safari Outfitters, and it sells survival food and gear. The owner says people are worried about the collapse of society, so he's had to boost his inventory of ready-to-eat meals. The good news is, according to CBS St. Louis, outside the store, civilization appears to still be intact. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. Have a great weekend. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.